Warden, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries, published by Henry Press, and host of the Cozy Corner podcast, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Joining me today in the Cozy Corner is Edith Maxwell, author of the Quaker Midwife Mysteries, the fifth novel in the series, Judge Thee Not, released on September 10th. Thank you for joining me, Edith.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
So, can you introduce us to your Quaker Midwife series?
Oh, sure. Rose Carroll is an independent midwife tending to prenatal clients and helping at their births in the late 1880s in a bustling mill and factory town in northeastern Massachusetts. She hears secrets and can go places where the police can never go, that is, women's bedchambers. And she finds she has a facility for solving crimes. And by this book, by the fifth book, she has gotten the goodwill of the local police detective. In the first book or two, he was a bit suspicious of her helping, but now he's eager to have her, input on what's going on. Yeah.
And how did you decide to set a mystery series in the 1800s, and choose a midwife as your protagonist?
I'll address the second part first. many years ago, some decades ago, I taught independent childbirth classes. So I wasn't a midwife myself, but I, in my living room, I, would have three or four or five couples who were pregnant and looking forward to their birth and wanting to know what it was all about. And I would also offer my services as a doula, as a labor support person. So I would go along as the knowledgeable but non-medical person to kind of help them through their labor and birth, or interpret what the medical people were doing at the birth center or hospital. So I was really educated about and involved in that field. I've been interested in history in the north of Boston area for about 20 years, and I live in antique houses, and I live with someone who renovates antique houses, and we would go around and go to open houses of historic houses. And we moved to the town where I'd been attending Quaker meeting for at that time about 23 years. We moved here to Amesbury 7 years ago, and I read an article, and I could now, rather than driving to church on Sunday, I could walk. I could walk in less than 15 minutes. And I read an article in the local paper, about the Great Fire of 1888. Amesbury in that time was world famous for its carriages. It had many carriage factories and factories that made all the parts to go into carriages, the wheels and the upholstery and stuff. And the Great Fire burned down many of the carriage factories. And I the house we had moved into was built in 1880 for the mill workers. So just down the hill, a block down the hill, there were the Hamilton Mill cotton and woolen mills. There were there were nine buildings at its heyday. And some of them are still existing and house things like hardware stores and pizza places. And I was walking to Quaker meeting after I read that newspaper article, and I got an idea in my head, as we mystery authors do, of a Quaker mill girl who solved the mystery of the arson of 1888. Now, the mills were often populated by these young women, teenagers, many of whom came in from the surrounding farms or even from overseas to get work in these mill towns in Amesbury and Lawrence and Lowell, towns on rivers. And so I wrote a short story about that Quaker mill girl, Faith Bailey, and it was published in Best New England Crime Fiction of the next year, 2013, I think, or 14. And the characters and setting didn't want to go away. And I thought, well, I'd better write the novel, because I was already writing one contemporary cozy series for Kensington Publishing, the Local Foods Mysteries. And I wrote the first book, and I sold it to Midnight Inc. in a 3-book contract. And I'm bit off, and I turned out I love being an amateur historian. Who knew?
Who knew? Yeah. Well, I guess in that area, you're pretty much surrounded by history all the time.
All the time, yeah. Yeah, it's fun. I can walk around the streets and see places where I've set scenes or where I want to. And I have antique maps. I have the 1880 and 1890 maps, and I have them digitally. I have them on my computer, so I can zoom in and see, was that street here then, or was that street built after 1890? Was that building there then? You know, churches, and so, yeah, it's fun.
Speaking of history, you mentioned that the Quaker Mill Girls, women working in factories, basically. Your protagonist is a working woman. So people may have some preconceived notions about what women did and didn't do in the 1800s. So what in your novels might surprise readers about the role of women in the 19th century?
Yeah, that's a good question. So my Quaker midwife is what we might call a middle-class woman. She's not poor, but she doesn't need a chaperone. She doesn't use a chaperone to go around town. She doesn't own a carriage. She doesn't, and doesn't really want to have money, that kind of money and that kind of elite society where you went visiting and paid, you know, dropped your card and your visiting card in someone's brass dish in their front hall. She observes that stuff, so she's an outsider. In this book, in Judge Thee Not, one of the main characters is a blind woman who is pregnant. She's trilingual. She speaks French and Polish as well as English, and she's an interpreter for the courts. And so she's a working woman. She's married. She's got a 2-year-old, and then she's got this baby brewing in her. So Rose is taking care of her, and it turns out that what I discovered in that era, the cultural attitudes were that blind and deaf people were morons. They were stupid. They were not capable of learning. And so people say things in Jeanette Popka's presence, like at the court, and they say right in her presence, well, she's a moron. She doesn't know what we're talking about. She's probably deaf too. You know, so then she tells Rose those secrets that she hears. And she's actually based on a Quaker friend of mine who's been blind her whole life and is a perfectly competent member of society and a social worker and a musician. And so that's one working woman besides Rose. Rose's good friend Bertie Winslow is the postmistress and rides her horse astride, not side saddle. And it's a very irreverent, sort of a unconventional member of society, happens to be a lesbian and lives with her lover, Sophie, who's a lawyer. So I ease in these other working women. And Faith, the one in the first short story and in the books, she's Rose's niece. And she's been working in the mill, but she really wants to be a writer. She wants to be a journalist. And she tried to work her way into working for the paper. And by book 5, she's writing for the newspaper. So this happened. I mean, people, you know, and many of Rose's clients, one of her clients is a French-Canadian woman who I don't know, has 4 or 5 children. And she takes in piecework and laundry. So she does embroidery and mending and sewing at home and, you know, lives in a kind of like a tenement. So I really try to research the lives of the people that, not the society people, but the rest of society, which is everybody, and what women's lives were like, because we don't, at least when I was growing up, and I think still partly, we don't read that in the history books. We don't read that much, and I want to bring that side of life into my books.
Okay, so your books will give a more well-rounded picture of what women did, quote, back in the day.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm trying to.
And you also mentioned going to meetings. I'm assuming that you're also a Quaker or a member of the Religious Society of Friends yourself?
I've been a member of the Religious Society of Friends for 30 years, the whole time here in Amesbury. And yeah, I love bringing that in, and it really informs Rose's life. It makes her something of an outsider because Quakers in that day spoke with thee and thy instead of you. They didn't use titles to people, so she uses the detective's first name and the mayor's first name, and which, you know, sets people back a little bit. And they wore plain, what we call plain dress. So they would have worn, I've researched that. There's research in so many areas, but they wore basically the styles of maybe 10 years ago without any what I call frippery. So there's no flounces, there's no feathers, there's no lace. It's very plain, just plain dress. And the men dressed in plain dark clothing and suspenders, and the men didn't doff their hats to people in power, because one of the main tenets of Quakerism is that we all have that of God in us. We're all equal in God's eyes. And if we're all equal in God's eyes, what makes the president any better than me? What makes the priest any better than me? You know, so that's why the men didn't doff their hats. They didn't take them off inside. And people used first names, and women had an equal place in the running of the church, and always did. And they were in the forefront of the abolition movement and the women's suffrage movement were Quakers, Quaker women. And I love kind of working that in, but it really does inform Rose's everything she does. She trusts people, she has integrity, she lives with simplicity. She she wouldn't dream of hurting someone, but when she has to defend herself a couple of times in this series against an attacker, and she doesn't inflict, she wouldn't kill someone, but she does, she is able to defend herself when she needs to, which might surprise some people.
And have fellow Quakers been supportive of your crime-solving protagonist being a member of the community, or has that caused any upset?
Oh, people love the Quakers love the books. Yeah, I was featured in the Friends Journal, which is the national Quaker magazine, last spring? Yeah, I think it was last spring. They had an arts issue, and I wrote a whole article about like writing crime fiction as a Quaker, sort of from the author's point of view, right? Here I kill people in my books, and how do I reconcile that with the testimony of nonviolence? And I have to market my books, right? It's not a very modest thing to do, to like tell the world about my books, but I do try to conduct myself, with integrity, let's put it that way. No, people have been very supportive. It's a warm day in New England today when we're recording this, and a friend at Quaker meeting this morning said, oh, I'm taking your book to the beach. That's all I'm doing today. I'm just reading on the beach, reading the latest Quaker Midwife mystery.
Wow.
You go, Priscilla. Yeah.
Now you tackle some serious issues in your novel, such as prejudice, the role of women, questions about sexuality, yet they still fall under the historical cozy umbrella. So what's your response to critics who dismiss cozies as all fluff and no substance?
Oh my gosh, they haven't really read cozies then. Because, these are shelved as traditional novels, and they're really a bit away from the cozy. They're a bit darker, the Quaker Midwife Mysteries. You know, I do write two cozy series as Maddie Day, but those tackle difficult issues too. And you know, difficult things happen in people's lives, and people have romance, and they tackle, you know, it's real life. There are people who are discriminated against. In Judge Thee Not, it's really a theme of judgment and discrimination against this woman who's blind, against the lesbian, against immigrants. And, you know, unfortunately, some of those issues, those are still issues today. And in the second book, Call to Justice, there was a former slave who owns his own business and was kind of assisted by John Greenleaf Whittier for his freedom. And he's accused of the crime by somebody, and it's only 20 years after the Civil War, 24 years after the Civil War, when the book takes place. And even in Massachusetts, there were a lot of people who were extremely prejudiced against former slaves. And these were things that happened. In the Charity's Burden, the most recent one previous that came out last April, Rose, her women come to her when they're pregnant and they want help with their pregnancy and birth, but they also come to her when they don't want to be pregnant. And birth control in those days was not that reliable, but there were things you could do. And there were herbal remedies for pregnancy that might induce an abortion. And then there were the extremely life-threatening, I think in the book I called them mechanical abortions, where, you know, equivalent to 50, 60 years ago with coat hangers. And, you know, many women died. So she has a client who is bleeding out and claims it's a miscarriage, and Rose thinks it's way too much blood for a miscarriage. And we go from there. So I address those issues, and that's still an issue, right? Birth control and abortion is still an issue today. And I think that it's, well, these are the backdrop to the mystery, these issues. They were issues then and they're issues today, and I hope that people see those parallels. From my reviews, it seems that people do.
Now, you mentioned your other series that you write as Maddie Day, the Country Store Mysteries and the Cozy Capers Book Group Mysteries. What challenges do you face writing three different series?
Well, a lot. so I write three books a year or more. I did a recent blog post Monday the 23rd on the Wicked, September 23rd on the Wicked Authors blog that I'm part of, and I realized that five books came out this year.
Wow.
One of them is a novella in a three novella collection as Maddie Day, the Christmas Cocoa Murder, but that's a lot of books. I am a disciplined writer. I no longer have a day job. I haven't had one for 6 years or so. So I treat my writing as my job. I'm working by 7 every morning, except Sunday. I give myself a day of rest on Sunday. And I work all morning. I'm either writing first draft and I'm writing at least 1,500 words, or I'm revising and editing. And I try to just drive through that first draft until I have it done. And I've written a first draft in as few as 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. The current one, I think I finished it on last week, and it was, I think, 8 weeks, but I had some interruptions in there. And I really try to just really focus on that first draft. And I'm a former technical writer, among other careers. And so technical writing has no fluff at all. And so my first drafts are always way too short. And, books ago I used to panic, and now I go, it's too short, so I'm going to revise. You know, I know I'm going to get up to the word count my editor would like to see. I do not get, a lot of people ask if I get my characters and stuff confused. I don't get them confused at all. When I was first writing two series, I was in a critique group, and one of the members was particularly good at going, oh, wait a minute, Lauren Rousseau would do that, but Cam Flaherty would not do that. Oh, you're right. You know, like I was mixing up my protagonist just a little bit. occasionally, but I don't do that at all because they're all so real to me, and the setting is so real. And for a while, so my local food series, which went for 5 books, was in third person, and my other ones are in first person. And I would sometimes flip the wrong point, you know, if I'm writing in first person or third person. But now I write them all in first person, so that doesn't confuse me. So far, I haven't written any books in with more than one point of view. I'd like to try that, and I know that will be a challenge. The next project I take on, I will try that. But so there are challenges. So anyway, when I try to crank through the first draft, that goes well, except then I get in proofs, page proofs from a different series, and they have to be in next week.
Oh.
So I have to down the first draft, do the page proofs, and go back. And then I have to, or I get in, you know, copy edits on a different series. You know, so I have to do the thing that's due first.
Right.
So that, you know, and then, or I'm writing, I'm finishing a book in one series, and I have to, a book is coming out in a different series, and I have to promote it. I have to do guest blog, you know what it's like, guest blog posts and all that stuff. All the stuff. So those are challenges. But really, Alexia, I'm living my dream, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I absolutely love this career, this last career of mine. It's fabulous. Yeah. And you have a day job. You have to work around that stuff, too.
I do, but my day job is different enough from my writing that there's no danger of getting them confused.
That's true, right. Yeah, it's not fiction.
Speaking of promotion, you've got some appearances coming up in the October and November. So where can readers meet you and learn more about your books?
Oh, my goodness. Just bringing up my calendar. Let's see. Well, when is this podcast coming out? I have that in my...
October 6th.
October 6th. That will be... Well, okay. So after October 6th, the 4th, 5th, and 6th, the Wicked Authors, my group blog, we're going to appear 3 different places in New Hampshire, but that will be too late for this. Let's see, I'm going to be reading at the Victoria Mansion in Portland, Maine on Friday the 11th, October 11th and Saturday, October 12th as part of their Murder and Mayhem Weekend or something. I'm not quite sure, I've never done it before. On October 19th, I'll be at the Boston Book Festival on a panel at 11 in the morning, a mystery panel. I'll be at the Wareham, Massachusetts Library Mystery Club on October 10th. I'm going to be on a guest on a blog. I'm going to be on a the Chicks on the Case blog on October 30th. And giving a talk to the Newburyport Village, Newburyport, Massachusetts, on October 16th. And then we go to November, and I'll be at the New England Crime Bake, where I am co-chair, October 8th, 9th, and 10th. And I'm on a panel on the 9th, and I'll be everywhere. And after that, I am not sure if I have anything scheduled till the spring, but I know things will pop up. I have an events tab at edithmaxwell.com, and my website has all my names, all my series, all my short stories, my bio, and all that. So, and how to sign up for my newsletter. So the events tab of my website will have the most current information.
And I apologize, I actually misspoke. October 2nd is when this podcast will be up. It's on a Wednesday. October 6th is a Sunday, so actually October 6th.
Hey, so I'm going to revise that then. October 4th, I will be with the Wicked Authors. It's a Kensington-sponsored Wicked Authors tour, so there's 6 of us. I'll be at Jabberwocky Bookstore in Newburyport, Massachusetts, on the 4th at 7 p.m. On the 5th, I'll be in Wolfboro, Massachusetts from 4 to 6 with the Country Booksellers, and on October 6th, I will be at White Birch Books in Conway, New Hampshire.
Excellent.
So those are additions to the schedule. And I'm always at the Killer Characters blog, killercharacters.com, on the 3rd of the month. And I'm with the Wicked Authors blog every weekday. We have Wicked Wednesdays. We have guests. So I can always be found there too.
And other than your website and your blogs, where else on social media can readers find you?
You can find me on Facebook at Edith Maxwell. Edith Maxwell. I have a Facebook page, and Maddie Day has a page. Maddie Day and Edith Maxwell both have Instagram pages, and we both have Twitter accounts. Maddie Day is always as Maddie Day Author, because I didn't do the best job of picking that pen name, so there are other Maddie Days out there.
Okay.
So you gotta look for Maddie Day Author.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any secret to that pen name?
No. Well, a little bit. I wrote the Local Foods Mysteries for Kensington as Edith Maxwell. And I wanted to get another series started because I had a feeling they weren't going to extend it indefinitely. It wasn't doing super well. I mean, they had a lot of fans, but it's set on an organic farm in Massachusetts. And I used to have an organic farm, and so I know what I'm talking about. But it wasn't doing super well in sales. And so I brainstormed the Country Store Mysteries with my agent, and we proposed it to my editor at Kensington. He said, I'd love it, but I want you to use a pen name. Because they wanted it to look like a new author in the bookstores.
Yeah.
And in, you know, sales. So I wanted to be Ruthie Drew. I love the name Ruthie. If I'd had a daughter, I would have named her Ruthie. But I didn't. I had two boys. And Drew, you know, sort of in honor of Nancy Drew. And he said that sounded too old. Okay. All right. And then I thought, well, let's see. I had this great niece named Maddie. That sounds young. I don't know what I'm doing. And I didn't really check out other Maddie Days in the world. And anyway, that's the name. And then when they did cancel the local foods, and not extend the local food series after 5 books, my editor said he'd love to have another series from Maddie Day. I said, okay, now that's my name that's succeeding. So, and those are my pages. Those are the two series that just sell hugely well. The Quaker Midwife series are popular, but the two contemporary cozies are my paycheck, really. Okay. I got Maddie Day, and I'm hanging with her. So that's the story of that name.
And yeah. Speaking of bookstores, which bookstores or online sellers can readers get your books?
Well, all my books are at... Okay, So all my books are at Amazon. They're all my books are available in ebook and print. The Cozy Capers Book Group Mysteries has one book out. It's Murder on Cape Cod. And until December 31st, it's only available from Barnes & Noble in paperback. But as of December 31st, it's going to go to wide release. It was on a one-year exclusive Kensington Barnes & Noble deal. And that series and the Country Store series, the Country Store series is also in audio, and the Cozy Capers series will be. And those are all available to be ordered from independent bookstores. The Quaker Midwife Mysteries through book 4, I'm sorry, it's complicated, were with Midnight Inc., and they're available to be ordered by independent bookstores. They're not on audio. The Judge Thee Not is at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but it's not yet available to be ordered from independent bookstores, and it's not on audio yet. I had to move to a new publisher when Midnight Inc. was closed last fall. So it's a little complicated story, but you can find them all on Amazon at the very least.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me, Edith. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Oh, this has been really lovely, Alexia. Thank you for inviting me. And I hope you will find me on my website and sign up for my newsletter and say hi on social media. I always love to be in contact with fans.
And I also want to apologize if you heard any meowing. My cat has insisted on being part of this chat today.
Hey, I have a cat in every book and every series, so, and they're all my real cats. So no apologies about meowing, not from me.
Okay. And this has been Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries. Thank you, listeners, for joining us in the Cozy Corner, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Until next time, goodbye.